From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you. And this is a beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. If you're still here, there's a reason, so let's go out and find it. That's what I tell my kids every morning, or sometimes they tell me when I don't want to get out of bed. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And we're pleased to be joined by Justice Hoyt, who is the Director of Ticket Sales for our great Sacramento River Cats, right across the river in West Sacramento at the ballpark there, the beautiful ballpark, one of the most beautiful ballparks in all of minor league baseball. Justice, good day to you.
How are we doing today?
Doing very, very good. How are you?
Doing well, yeah. Summertime at the ballpark, can't go wrong.
Yeah, you know, it's the one thing I like about it's Sutter Health Park now, is that right?
Correct, you got it.
Yeah, you know, we grew up with Rayleigh Field, and how does that happen? These are generally for us. You name a ballpark, and it costs, you know, there's a certain donation or cost of doing business, so you buy it, I guess, and then it expires after a certain period of time.
Yeah, it depends on obviously the length of the deal. So it all depends on what's happened in the past and where it's at right now. There's a lot of behind the scenes in terms of elements that go into a deal of such magnitude, and elements that go into different parts of the day and operations of what we do. And it happened in 2020, but we weren't able to show it off as much just because there was unfortunately not able to be anybody at the ballpark.
Right, right. That had to be a real difficult year.
Yes, it definitely was. Yeah, a lot different for sure. And it was unique for myself as well, just because I started in February of 2020, and by the time we had to start work from home, I was only in the office for about 2 weeks, so I really didn't even know much of the staff yet.
Yeah, and you know, there's something about walking out about 7 o'clock on a summer evening as the sun's about to go down, and you feel that warmth. And there's something about minor league baseball has traditionally been much more a nighttime game. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about thinking, oh, we need to get in the car and go see a Rivercrats game, and there were no games.
Yes, I know. Yeah, it was just one of those things where some days you drive by the stadium, you're like, wait, the lights are supposed to be on tonight, or I didn't hear any fireworks this weekend. What happened? Type of thing. That one of those just automatic. You just think of baseball, you think of summertime, and you just every time you drive by the ballpark or think something's going on, it unfortunately wasn't there last year.
Yeah, and baseball, of course, when you go all the way from spring training in February and the opening day around the 1st of April, late March, 1st of April, all the way into October now, almost November, when you talk about the World Series, it's more than just the boys of summer.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's almost the whole year now. You're right, exactly. By the time the World Series is done, the pitchers and catchers are already getting ready to have their holiday seasons and then report right back to camp.
Now, you got a big event coming up Sunday.
Yeah, we're excited.
Our Bishop Soto, will be there. A lot of dads, granddads, a chance to be on the field with Bishop Soto. And I've been to this many times. Usually it was on Father's Day.
Yep.
This year it will be on the 22nd, and it's celebrating St. Joseph in the year of St. Joseph, and also celebrating our bishop and dads and granddads and baseball, the American pastime.
Yeah,
That's that, you know. And I always like to go to that ballpark because they have something called a dinger dog.
Yes, you can't go wrong with that either. That's a lot of hot dog for you.
You
right
gotta
there.
Have at least three hands to eat it.
Yes, yeah. When they hand it back to you, you already turn around asking somebody to help you.
That's right. I take a little push cart with me to take it back to my seat.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
No, that's right. I know the first time I got one, I was with my kids were pretty little at the time, and I thank the good Lord that I hadn't bought them one because they couldn't have gotten their mouth around it.
No, yeah. You have to be in prime condition and ready to have a hot dog eating contest for that.
It's weird because you never see a hot dog that looks like that in the grocery store.
Oh, not at all. No, yeah, that's a unique one for sure.
Yeah, indeed. Tell us a little bit about yourself. What brought you to Sacramento?
Yeah, so I actually am from upstate New York.
Wow.
And, yeah, so I'm pretty far away from home right now, but definitely enjoy the California side of things for sure. So I actually, from upstate New York, lived there my whole life, and then found a job actually to go work for the Stock Imports, a single-A team for Oakland A's.
Yep.
So I was down there for about 6.5 years and then moved my way up to here. So definitely don't see myself going back to the snow anytime soon. So I definitely appreciate the California side of things for sure. In the West Coast, you can't go wrong with it at all. So, yeah. Out here now, enjoying life, and obviously still working in baseball, and I don't think that'll ever change.
Yeah, upstate New York is known for its snow. That's for sure.
Yeah, known for snow, and also known for not getting snow days for schools just because all the plows and everybody are prepared for it. So
yeah. You
would think there'd be a chance to miss out on a day of school or so, but that usually doesn't happen.
That's too bad. I remember when I was a kid growing up in Davis, just across the causeway from the Rivercats, and there was a professor at the University of California there, and his claim to fame, and he still told us stories about it. He was probably 50 at the time, or maybe 60. He had been a pitcher for the Stockton Ports.
That's pretty cool. But that team's been around and has a rich tradition. I mean,
rich tradition.
They were around, I think they started in 1946.
Yep.
They've been around the state of California for a long time.
Yeah, and it's such an important part of that community. I mean, they still, they call it the port city, and people think port like port wine. No, port like ocean, like river. Yeah.
Big boats coming through daily.
Exactly. So, that's interesting. So you were in baseball in New York, though?
I basically finished college. I did a couple internships out there getting myself into sports and into baseball specifically, and then was lucky enough to land a job out here and try something different.
It's a big switch, isn't it?
Very much so. But I wouldn't change anything for it. I mean, definitely a lot different. That's what I wanted. I wanted to try something out of the norm, try something different than anybody else in my family or friends, and pack up and just drive my car across country with whatever I had in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I made it happen.
Where'd you go to college?
St. John Fisher in Rochester, New York. Yep.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Yep.
So, you're out here in California, and you're director of ticket sales,
mm-hmm.
and that's more than standing at the ticket window telling people how much the ticket cost.
That's
a lot of promotion. A lot of creativity goes into that job.
Definitely. No. Yeah. There's a lot of things that go into it on a daily basis just to prep for the next homestand, prep for what to expect going into the summertime, and just a lot of creativity going into what do the fans want in terms of promotions or what type of package would be the best fit for them, what type of options that we want to make sure that could be utilized by all when coming out to the ballpark. So a lot of different things going on in terms of the behind the scenes to ultimately get the execution out to the fans to see exactly what's going on at the ballpark.
What's the capacity there?
14,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for years, among the top draw of any minor league franchise in the country.
Definitely, yes, definitely. No, yeah, we're definitely a ballpark that can hold a lot of people, but also the fans come out, and we appreciate that. I mean, Sacramento and the surrounding area is definitely a big market to work with, unlike some other towns where they don't have that ability. So we definitely appreciate the size of our ballpark because we can definitely utilize it on those big nights for fans to come out and really enjoy themselves.
When and if they build a soccer stadium on the other side of the river, how does that affect you?
I think it would actually help us, I believe, just mm-hmm. because that just brings one more sports team into the city where fans can truly enjoy the atmosphere of just being out in the open, in the public, enjoying life and just taking in a baseball game, soccer game, basketball game. All that stuff, I think, just helps across the board, and I think ultimately it elevates every sports organization in town just because it means there's one more thing for everybody to do and enjoy sports and have that chance to get out of the house, that release of just, hey, we're going to put life to the side a bit. We're just going to go out to the ballpark or out to a stadium and enjoy it.
So at what point this year did you know you were going to have a season here in West Sacramento?
It was obviously later than the past. I mean, I would say we knew it was coming this year. We just didn't know when we were going to start based off of everything going on. Obviously, we were prepping for April because that's when baseball normally starts, but we also knew there was a chance that things had to get shifted around, and we were able to do our best to navigate that. But, I mean, by the time we by the time we got into January, February, we knew the season was going to happen. It just was a matter of when is opening day and when that would be, and prepping for the ability to shift that like we had to by a month.
And did you have any restrictions when you opened, like from
Definitely.
The county health department, things like that?
Yeah, so when we first opened the ballpark, we were at a 25% capacity, mm-hmm. so we were limited, very limited, based off of what we would say normal would be at. But there was also just the policies in place that we had to obviously follow to make sure we were safe here at the ballpark and doing so in the best way possible, where everybody had to be 6 feet socially distanced. Nobody could sit on the aisle seats, just because if someone had to get past, you'd get mm-hmm. down to their seats, all that good stuff. So how we had to set up what we called pod-style seating. So there only could be two pods in each row, so somebody had direct access to the aisle no matter which way they needed to go to not invade somebody else's bubble. So definitely looked a little bit different, but obviously we did whatever we had to make sure fans could come out to the ballpark and enjoy themselves.
And how did that change as the season has progressed?
Yeah, every month it seems to be getting a little bit better. Obviously, once June 15th hit, things opened up to 100%. We were able to open up. Obviously, we're fortunate enough that we are all outdoors, which makes a big difference,
right.
obviously, with the guidelines that have been given to us. So, obviously, we've been able to utilize that to our advantage to have fans come out, and we're trying to make sure that every homestand we keep getting better and better in terms of attendance and making sure that fans know that this is a safe spot to come to the ballpark. We take the correct precautions to make sure everyone enters the ballpark safely, leaves the ballpark safely, and can make sure they can come back and enjoy another game as soon as they can.
Could you be at a sellout if that's what the series dictated, if you could sell that many tickets?
Yeah, definitely. No, yeah, we could definitely do so. We just want to make sure that we're also doing it in a safe way. So if we have the ability to sell out, we obviously can, and we have the ability of doing so. We just want to make sure we're not overwhelming fan experience as well. So we don't want to have you go up to the concession stand and wait 3 innings in line for food, or we don't want you to lose out on the opportunity to get as close as you can to the field and enjoy a baseball game. So we have the ability to. We just want to make sure that at the same time we're not overwhelming fans and making the fan experience at the ballpark lesser because of us keep gaining capacity.
Now, when I was a kid, I remember the Pacific Coast League, it was still, AAA or what, one step mm-hmm. down from the majors, but it was the Seattle Rainiers, the Portland Beavers, Sacramento Solons playing Edmonds Field on Broadway, mm-hmm. The Oakland Oaks, San Francisco Seals, Hollywood Stars, Los Angeles Angels, and the San Diego Padres. There are 8 teams. And for years, it didn't change very much.
Yeah.
Now it's literally all over the map.
Yeah.
How do you keep fan interest going? How much depends on who you're playing, where you are in the standings, and how much of it just depends on it being a nice summer night?
Honestly, the nice summer night is the biggest
that is,
thing, fact in our favor. I mean, yes, it's always fun. We have Las Vegas Aviators, who's the A's affiliate, come to town, or the
right.
Oklahoma City Dodgers, who are the Dodgers affiliate. It's always nice to have that. But at the same time, it's just the ability to getting out and the promotions that we offer or special that we do in terms of food areas and stuff like that. But we always say, like, hey, when you leave the ballpark, most likely 95% of our fans aren't going to remember the score, but they're going to remember they caught a foul ball, they
yep.
watched a fireworks show, they got to hang out with their son, daughter, wife, kids, other family members as well. So ultimately, we're trying to capitalize on the experience that you have here at the ballpark and make sure you get a takeaway rather than what's happening on the field. Obviously, winning a championship in 2019 was awesome for the team, and definitely utilizing that to our advantage and the high of being a AAA champion, which doesn't come around too often.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to obviously use that to our advantage, but ultimately the big thing is just making sure that you come to the ballpark, have that smiling face, and you have that chance to take a good memory away.
How many AAA leagues are there now?
There's only two.
There's
AAA West and AAA East.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different where, we have divisions within the different levels, but right now there's just the East and the West.
Does anybody else, any other level, have a playoff?
Yes. All levels and classifications of minor league baseball do have playoffs. This year, obviously, a little bit different, but, yeah, every level does have playoffs.
How big of a deal is it when the Giants send somebody down for a while in terms of your fan turnout and things like that?
Yeah, it definitely helps. I mean, everybody knows who they watch on TV when you're watching a Giants game, and the fact that they can come down and play in front of the hometown crowd is always great because not everybody can make it to a Giants game, but you can definitely drive 5-10 minutes down to the field and enjoy a baseball game. And those major league guys always love coming. I mean, they don't love coming down because obviously they're coming down to rehab or trying to get themselves right to get back up to the majors, but they always take care of our fans. You'll always see somebody in the major league side of things come on down. They sign a couple extra autographs or wave to the kids a little bit more. And again, that goes back to the memories that we like to give to fans when they leave the stadium rather than having that bad experience or that ability to not see somebody play in a rehab assignment. But yeah, it's definitely fun, and it creates a little bit more excitement when people are walking up the stairs to the ballpark.
Let me know when Willie Mays suits up.
Yeah, will do. Will do one day.
I was covering the World Series in Oakland. I guess they were playing the Mets, and back in the 70s, and I got to see Willie's last game.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's a great memory.
Yeah. Oh, boy, is it. Boy, is it. he was... You know, somebody asked me the other day who was the greatest baseball player of all time, and everybody has their top five or something, and almost everybody, some of them have Willie number one, but almost everybody have him in the top five.
Oh, for sure, yeah. That's greatness in the making right there.
Who's your top five?
Oh, man.
Put you on the spot.
Yeah, top five? I mean,
impossible.
Yeah, it really is. I'm trying to, like, in terms of, like, my personal fandom, just because where I grew up, and just watching baseball, you have to respect, like, the Barry Bonds of the world.
Right.
Even though I know there's some controversy there, just, like, growing up and seeing what he did on a daily basis and doing what he could pull off, the Mark McGuire's of the world, I mean, the Derek Jeter's of the world that have stayed with, I mean, not many players stay with one team for life and can contribute as much as they did. So you have to look at those people. I mean, even they're not there yet in terms of top five, but you can see the Mike Trouts of the world, those type of players that are just once-in-a-lifetime opportunities where you might not realize it until a little bit later on in life, but you have to respect the game of where it's at right now and seeing these guys before your eyes dominating baseball.
Yeah, it is amazing. Back in the good old days, as they call them, most players played with one team.
Mm-hmm.
And then Curt Flood sued Major League Baseball and won, and the floodgates opened.
Yeah.
And suddenly people that you thought of as that's a lifelong Giant or a lifelong Dodger or a lifelong Yankee, not so anymore.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. They're their own businessmen. They have to make sure they do what they can, even though it might not be in one spot anymore.
So when a player comes down for rehab, then he hasn't been sent down because for lack of performance, but he maybe coming off injury, something like that. Are there specific instructions from on high saying how much to use this guy and what we want you to do with him?
Yeah, it definitely depends on where the progression is in terms of their ability to get back to the majors. Or they could be, if it's a pitcher, hey, this person has to stay within 5 innings or 80 pitches. Or, hey, this person gets 2 at-bats and they're done for the night. Or, hey, we're going to try and make sure that if you have a bad hamstring, let's not try and first at-bat stretch a single into a double type of thing. They really hone in on, hey, you're competitive. Yes, we know you want to be at 100%, but we also have to make sure that we have no setbacks in terms of where we're at in current health. So there definitely is progressions in how they operate. A lot of the times, hey, we're not going to let you play back-to-back games. We want to make sure we give you a day off in between to make sure that your body's back to where it needs to be to take the next step in the progression. So it definitely depends on position player to pitcher, if you're a catcher to the outfield. That all depends on where you're at and obviously what type of injury you had as well.
So do you ever have guys want to stay because you guys have dinger dogs and they don't have them in San Francisco?
Not that I know, but, hey, they have lobster rolls up there, so they might like that just as much.
Maybe DoorDash would deliver them to the Bay Area.
There you go. For sure. Definitely. I'll take the driving for that.
Tell us about Sunday. Gates open at 11.
Yep.
It's a rare day game.
Yes, we don't have many day games. Sundays are usually our only true day games that we offer on a monthly basis and a weekly basis. So, yeah, day game on Sunday, gates open at 11. We're excited because it's a unique opportunity that fans get to come out to the ballpark and obviously meet the Bishop and hang out with him and Dinger for a bit themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously we'll have our game going on. And then post-game, we're excited that we can offer out the ability to stick around a little bit and go on the field and play some catch.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You know, it's a different feeling. You know, you can go to a ball game every day of your life and sit in the stands and look at the field, and the field is just beautiful. But it's a different feeling when you're on the field looking up at the crowd.
Yeah, when you get to sit on the field and look in the stands, like, wow, that's a lot bigger than I thought.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
If you're in the stands, you're like, oh, that section's not too far away. And if there's a bunch of people in it, you don't really notice it. But when you're on the field and take a look up, you definitely can understand where players come from when they love the big crowds and also the pressure that comes along with it.
I remember one of my kids one time, you know, chasing foul balls. And I remember going with my dad as a kid and actually getting a foul ball. But I was with my kids, and we were at a Rivercats game, and you know, a lot of balls kind of came our way. We were kind of out in left field, but not too far from the baseline, you know. And you know, they kept bouncing around and kept coming close, never got one. And one of my kids says, "How many baseballs do they go?" First off, they thought they had to give it back, and he said, "How many baseballs do they use in a game?" It's astronomical.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I know, and it depends, but sometimes they get, you like, I think they get around like 8 dozen baseballs ready to go before the game
wow.
starts, just to have them ready to go, because you can't just pull them out of the box and throw it out to the pitcher. You have to make sure that the ball's inspected, checked right, make sure everything's ready to go. But yeah, they do go through a lot of baseballs, and like you, if you go into extra innings, or one day someone's just falling off a bunch of pitches, and you're now deep into the dozen box, you have to bust out another one. So, yeah, they go through a lot on a daily basis.
Wow. That's, you know, you read there's some leagues where they experiment with rule changes.
Mm-hmm.
Have they done that with the Rivercats at all?
This year, actually, a little bit. Our bases are actually a little bit bigger. So they expanded our bases a little bit.
And why is that?
Like, a couple things. They're trying to reduce on injuries. In terms of, like, if you're trying to go from first to third and you round the base, you want to make sure they're catching the full base.
Uh-huh.
And they're also trying to make the game a little bit more exciting, where if someone tries to steal second, every time it feels like they're going to the replay now to check on it to see if they're really safe or out. So that extra couple inches makes a little bit difference and makes it more exciting to see if someone can steal a couple more bases, or, hey, that play at home is a little bit closer than we originally thought. So our bases did get expanded here a little bit, and trying to just test it out and see if it's worth keeping around or if it's worth putting up to the major leagues. But, yeah, every classification this year is doing a little bit different things in terms of, I don't want to say altering the rules, but just testing the waters.
Here, I'll give you a rule. I want a ruling on this. I was watching a college baseball game, Oregon State. I think they were playing Michigan. But it wasn't in the College World Series, but I think it was in the Super Regional, and tie game, and like bottom of the ninth, they're playing in Corvallis in Oregon, and nobody could hit. I think it was 1-1. You know, nobody could hit anybody, but Jacoby Ellsbury, who had some good years in Boston and some in New York, but very injury prone. He's on third base, and he was a wizard stealing bases, especially in the college level. Mm-hmm. And there's two outs and two strikes on the batter. And finally, he gets the signal to steal home.
Wow.
And he just barrels. He crosses home plate before the pitch does. The pitch is in the air, but he crosses home plate before. There was no way they could tag him out.
Yeah.
The ball had not yet reached the catcher. He slides across home base, and umpire goes, strike three.
Interesting, okay.
And they spent about an hour talking about it. And finally ruled that he had scored.
Yeah, I would probably stick with that, because the decision to steal home, and that happened before the pitch crossed the plate. So that the result of the play ended.
And it was
before
a third out. It would have been a third out. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I would consider it's almost like someone hitting a sack fly or somebody getting in a rundown, I guess, from say between first
and second. Yeah, exactly.
And the guy scores from third before the out occurs. So that's stick with that. Yeah, I would say I would count it as a win.
I think the only time it doesn't happen is if the hitter doesn't make it to first base. That's always the third out, no matter how many people scored.
Yeah.
But any other time, like you say, a rundown or anything else, if the guy scores before that part of the play makes the third out, it counts.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those unique ones that probably will never happen again, but everybody will remember it. No, they're ruling on it now.
Probably not. I wonder if there's a video. There must be a video somewhere. But
it has to be, yeah.
It was. I remember sitting there and watching this and going, this is fascinating because they don't know. And they ultimately ruled that he scored. But and I agree with you. I think it was the right ruling. But of course, I was rooting for Oregon State, and
yeah,
you know, that can kind of affect your perception of things.
Yes, most definitely.
So, people can still buy tickets, or can they just show up at the game?
Yeah, people can still buy tickets. Obviously, we suggest using the link that we have offered to you guys, just because then it goes towards your guys' credit and your guys' ability to all sit together. Obviously, you can walk up to the box office and sit in the same area. But if you go through the link, obviously, you get your group rate, which is obviously going to be a little bit more affordable than if you just walked up to the box office.
Right.
And it gives you the chance to make sure everybody sits together.
Very good. Very good. And you've put in extra Dinger Dogs?
Dinger Dogs are already ready to go.
They're already in the water, right?
They're bringing in the trucks right now.
Very good. Very good. Well, Justice, it's such a joy to talk with you, and I know you're doing such a great job there. I hear that all the time, and best wishes to you and the River Cats, and let's all have a great day on Sunday honoring St. Joseph and all the dads and granddads in our area.
Most definitely, yeah. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to talk, and we'll see everybody out here at the ballpark soon.
Very good. God bless, Justice. Really,
have a great evening.
Hey, you too. Appreciate it very much. That's Justice Hoyt, who is the director of ticket sales for the Sacramento River Cats. You know, Gabe, every time we talk to somebody from the River Cats, we had Cole Szczesinski on a couple of weeks ago. They're just great to talk to, and they are living the dream. They want to be part of baseball. And there's so many people, little kids, they do anything to be in the ballpark. And they're thinking, wow, that's actually this guy's job. He gets to go to the baseball game every night. You know, they're just a really great organization and a real, real asset to the whole Sacramento region. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at the thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society, and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Deacon Kevin Stasko, the Director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry and Family and Faith Formation, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Thank you, Deacon Kevin, for that wonderful introduction. We are just thrilled and honored to be joined by Gabe Maya, who is about to leave for a wonderful collegiate baseball career, we hope, at the University of San Diego. Gabe, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, sir?
Doing fine. Just call me Bob. It's got three letters just like sir, but call me Bob.
How's it going, Bob?
Yeah, thank you. University of San Diego, great Catholic school in San Diego, up on a little hill there overlooking the city, and Division One baseball. Has this been a dream for a while?
Yes, it's been a dream in the making since I touched a baseball when I was eight, so I'm pretty pumped, you know, to fulfill that dream and go out and compete at a high level.
And you're a pitcher?
Yes, I am.
You're a lefty?
Yep, a little southpaw action.
You know, it's not fair. I'm a right-hander, and it's only like 10% of the population is left-handed, and yet a half, at least, of the pitchers in the major leagues are lefties.
Yeah.
What's the deal?
It's a weird stat, knowing that many lefties, left-handed athletes, and also, like, in any sport, go on to the next level.
Yeah, it's five times the national average, you know. And there are a lot of left-handed batters as well. Are you guys just superior athletes? I mean, don't be humble. Just tell the truth. I mean, being left-handed, does that make you better?
It's definitely a little more difficult, especially in baseball, because instead of the ball coming out from the right side, like as a pitcher, when I pitch, it comes out the left side. So it's coming out from a whole different type of viewpoint for
right,
a hitter, so
right.
I think it just looks completely different.
Wow.
So yeah, it is a big advantage.
You know, I was on a tennis team in college, and my doubles partner was a lefty, and nobody could return his serve because it spun. It would bounce, and a person would go to hit it, and it would bounce the other way.
Exactly.
They'd never get used to it. And I just giggle. You know, it's like, I'm glad this guy's on my side.
Yeah.
So when you're a left-handed pitcher or a right-handed pitcher, is it easier or harder? And I don't even know the stats on this, but you know, people will say, well, we got a right-handed batter now, we're going to bring in a right-hander to out of the bullpen to pitch to him. Explain how that works with a left-handed pitcher pitching to a lefty or a righty at the plate.
So the advantage the left-handed pitcher has to a right-handed batter and a left-handed batter is two different things. So as a left-handed pitcher, our ball tails to the left.
Right.
So it comes straight to home plate and tails to the left. So on a left-handed batter, it's actually coming in on their hands, which is hard to track.
Right.
And for a right-handed batter, it's actually moving away from them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a whole different type of pitch, whole different type of spin. And typically, and I don't know why a baseball does this, but for righties, the ball typically is straight and flat. A fastball is just straight and flat on a right-handed pitcher. And that's why lefties are so rare, because lefties just have this natural tail that no one can explain. It's just maybe, I mean, there's been proposals of Earth's rotation having an effect on a baseball, how lefties, it's counterclockwise. So that makes the spin. I mean, it's a whole different ball game, spin-wise, especially when you're facing a right-handed batter and a left-handed batter. The ball just looks different to them, and it's just rare
right.
to see, so it just makes it 1,000 times harder.
Are there stats on that about, you know, what batting averages, lefty versus lefty, lefty versus righty? Baseball's all about stats now.
Yeah, it's all about stats, and it's all about, like a very advanced game of chess, right?
So,
I mean, you look at the stats, and you'll see some in the major leagues all the time. They'll sometimes bring out a left-handed pitcher to face a big number four left-handed hitter, and he'll face one guy. He'll
one
face
guy.
The four-hitter and then
yep.
get the third out, get the next out, and they'll move on to the next guy in the bullpen. I mean, they just want to play the odds of, okay, this batter's batting 125 against left-handed pitching. Let's just throw him for one batter and get an out because bases are loaded, runners are on base, we need this out. So it's kind of cool playing the chess game and the statistic game and getting your out and getting a win.
It's very frustrating to a sort of a armchair fan that maybe doesn't understand all the nuances of it to see a guy pitch seven scoreless innings, give up two hits, strike out nine, don't walk anybody, and they pull him. And next guy comes in and gives up five straight home runs. And you go, why did they pull him?
You know. Exactly, yeah.
But
it's funny how the game just changes like that.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, I think with some pitchers, after about four innings of hitless ball, the team that's hitting says, we can't hit this guy today. We can't
exactly.
hit him. You know, and you go up and...
Starting pitchers are like fine wine. The older it gets, the better it gets.
Yep, that's right.
So once they see a lineup two times, you're not going to touch... No one's going to touch you for the next two times. I mean,
right.
guys are going to 0-for-4 against starters, and it's just because pitchers figure out the lineup like that. And that's just how smart and intelligent and how much of a chess game baseball is.
You know, I remember, you know, when I was growing up... The fastball was what everybody talked about, you know, and I swear some of these guys could just, the Bob Gibsons, Bob Fellers, Koufax, they could just overpower guys. I don't think you see that quite as much as you did. I think it's much more finesse now.
I think it's a lot more finesse, and it's not a lot more, like, mean, old-school type of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's starting to change a little bit into finesse and a little bit more excitement. I guess that's what the league is shooting for, which is fun to watch. A lot more home runs, a lot more hard hits, and a lot more strikeouts. But those strikeouts are with sliders, curveballs, changeups, all the nasty stuff.
Well, the number of strikeouts in Major League Baseball is now a big concern to everybody, and not necessarily the fans, but to baseball brass. They're worried about it. There have been some discussions of moving the mound back, or after Bob Gibson had his great year, they lowered the mound. One of the theories is that everybody's trying to hit home runs. And I remember Ted Williams, the great Ted Williams, the last guy to hit over 400 for a season. After he got two strikes, he choked up on the bat and he went for singles.
Yeah.
You know, he said, I'm
exactly.
not going to try to hit a home run with two strikes on me. And that, I think there's a lot of truth to that. That everybody wants to hit the home run, and actually the fans want them to hit the home runs.
Yeah, and what's crazy nowadays is guys are signing $100 million contracts to bat 250 and hit 30 jack sweeps.
Yeah, that bat 250. That's exactly right. I'm looking at the major league home run leader right now, and he's hitting about 270 or something, and everybody says he's a superstar, and I'm going, he's only hitting 270, you know.
Yeah, he might have 40 bombs, but he's striking out another 40 times.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's apparently what you know. If it puts people in the seats, it's even what management wants. I've always said that. I know the manager has a very very difficult job, but I think I could have managed the 1954. New York Yankees to a World Series title.
Oh yeah.
Now just Mantle, okay, Maris, Whitey Ford on the mound. Yeah, okay. There's my lineup card. I'm going to leave them in for the whole game, all of them.
Yeah. All 9 innings every day.
All 9 innings every day, that's right. So we're talking with Gabe Maya, who played baseball at Christian Brothers and has now accepted a scholarship. You are living the dream. I mean, there are, for every one of you, there's 1,000 kids that wish they were you.
Yeah, it's a crazy dream, but, you know, I'm thankful that God, my family, my coaches, my teammates, my friends, they're the ones that all made this possible and just turned me into who I am today, and it's a great opportunity to go, especially to a Catholic university,
mm-hmm.
and represent the Lord and my family and myself and go compete at the highest level.
Yeah, and you're playing in a league that's almost exclusively Catholic schools.
I'm pretty sure like 9 out of 13 of them are all Catholic schools. So yeah. We're going to be going to a lot of church on road trips.
So you got to be careful when you're praying to God to let me strike this guy out, because he's
for their team too. He's Catholic kids going at it.
He's praying just the opposite.
Exactly.
yeah. And this year, in that league, Gonzaga had a pretty good team this year.
Yeah, they crazy series going into the end in order to get into the college baseball tournament.
Right.
Yeah, it was a crazy series. We were down. USD was down, I want to say, 3 games.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed the sweep. Or we were down 2 games.
Right.
And we needed the sweep the last weekend of the season to advance into pool play. But we got beat up a little bit Friday night, and then we came back and we beat them up pretty good Saturday and Sunday. So that Friday night had been a little bit different. That's where we say those Catholic schools and God's root for their team sometimes. It would have been safe for pool play, but we'll get them this year. We'll get them our first year.
Yeah. So explain how you picked San Diego and how University of San Diego. People get confused sometimes. There's UC San Diego and there's San Diego State. And there's University of San Diego. Is it because they're the toreros? Do you even know what a torero is?
A torero is a bull dancer. So,
okay. All right.
Yeah, we're a bunch of bull dancers.
Okay. So how did they find you? How did you find them? And did you have other places you were considering?
So I had visited USD with my travel ball team mm-hmm. back in 2018, and when I stepped foot on campus and I went to the Immaculata, the church there,
right.
I instantly fell in love with it. It was the most beautiful, amazing atmosphere campus I had ever seen in my life. And when I was thinking about schools I was going to go to, I was thinking more Catholic, private, and smaller numbers. I think we only have about 10,000 students at USC.
Right.
And that was my big concern was, I wanted to go to a school, especially a Catholic school, where I can go to church on Sunday, and I can know my professors better than I know anyone else. My mm-hmm. professors are going to back me up, and we're going to have a relationship, and I'm going to get out of there in 4 years. So USD was definitely my dream school, and I started talking to them right before COVID had started, right during the middle of my junior year. I had ran into a junior college coach who was actually my dad's high school catcher. So
oh,
I ran
wow.
into him at a restaurant. And my dad introduced me and the JUCO coach. And JUCO's junior college.
Right.
And he introduced us, and he had asked for some video. So I sent him some video, and he said, all right, Gabe, I'm going to help you out. You look young. You look good. Let me send out some videos about your coaches. So he sent them out to St. Mary's in Moraga, USF, Sac State, mm-hmm. San Jose State, and these were all schools that I was very interested in and talking to at the time. We sent it to LMU and University of San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I got a call about 2 months later from USD saying, hey, Gabe, like, we love you. Let's talk. Let's start sending video. And so that whole recruiting process went down, and in my mind, I'm just freaking out, like, oh, my gosh, my dream school is calling me, like, this is amazing. And while I hadn't received any offers at the time, it was really hard to receive offers during COVID because, you know, there wasn't a lot of scholarships to go around.
Right.
There was a bunch of returning athletes because the whole year had been canceled.
Yeah, everybody got an extra year's eligibility.
Exactly, yeah. So it was really hard to, you know, just even find a spot on a team. So
right.
I'm in the middle of COVID, middle of the pandemic, worrying about there's not going to be any spots. So thankfully, about after 2 months of talking, USD was able to say, hey, Gabe, you want to come play for us? And in my head, I'm usually college athletes wait out after their first offer, but in my
right.
head, I was like, Catholic school, my dream school, I want to be with God, I'm going to go. Like, let's just do it. Like, this is my dream school, this is my number one choice. So I took their offer, and I became a torero. It was the best decision of my life.
Were you able to take any campus visits during your senior year?
No. So, unfortunately, COVID had taken all that away. I've only met my coach 2 or 3 times. So, I'm excited to see them. I haven't seen them in person for 2 years.
So I'm excited to see all them, meet my new teammates, and it's been nice, though, that we've actually been doing Zoom calls and talking on the phone every other week. So we're in a lot of contact, but other than that, I haven't been able to visit campus in 2 years or see them. So it's been a weird but amazing experience.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously lots of reasons beyond baseball or sports to attend a university, to pick a university, and you've articulated those very well, you know, especially about the University of San Diego, which is academically just really first rate and, again, a great Catholic school. And that's really well and good. However, as a baseball player, you must look at the roster and go, especially as a pitcher, you know, like they're basically, you get in college baseball the Friday starter, the Saturday starter, the Sunday starter, and then you've got everybody else in between, and go, is there a spot for me here?
Yeah, and that's definitely something that you have to look at when reaching out to schools and when talking to schools. But I think USC was perfect for me because I had trained my body that entire year to both go in a starting position role and a relief position. So I love starting, and I love starting a game and setting the tone for the game. But I also love stopping the party, shutting things down, and winning the game for a team. So I love both roles. And thankfully at USD, we have a couple of left-handed pitchers where I'd like to come in, and I'd like to make a big impact my freshman year.
So – yeah, I guess that's the other question I've always had is, does everybody want to be a starting pitcher, or do people, are some people really happy to be middle innings or closers or et cetera?
And it just depends on the pitcher. I mean, I love starting and relieving, but I know some guys who just don't have enough energy to go all night. I know some guys who are just built for it. Like, typically hard throwers, guys who just throw hard and everything they got. Those are your closers, those are your middle relievers, and the guys that are really finesse and very, very athletic and make the distance, those are typically your starters.
So is a freshman year in college baseball, is that more of a look-and-see year, or is that a year where you might be a starting pitcher?
I'm sure it's a little bit of both. It's definitely getting your feet wet, and I'm ready to, you know, hit the ground running and definitely try to learn and experience everything that I can my freshman year. It honestly just depends on how you play in the fall, how you play in the spring, and how you earn your stripes. So all I know is I'm going to work my tail off in the fall, and whatever role I need, whatever role I am, I'm going to perform at the highest level, and I'm going to give it my all.
Now, they do have fall ball in college baseball. What does that involve? The season doesn't start now till February, the regular season. You start in January, and then they figured all those northern schools complained and said, hey, we can't play in January. So
exactly,
it now starts in February, even though Oregon State was doing pretty good winning national championships. But so what does fall ball involve?
So I think fall ball is definitely a time for freshmen to earn their stripes and to get back in the swing of things and definitely get back into routine, because the spring is just, it's just a grind. So I had recently seen a tweet online saying, you know, fall ball is definitely the biggest grind in them all, because in the spring, that's where the reward is. In the fall, you're just earning your stripes and putting the work in. That spring, it's easy. And I don't have no experience. I mean, I'm just getting down there next week, but you know, I'm really excited for fall ball, and it mostly just consists of weights and practice and games. So it's just easy games to get your feet wet, and then getting big and strong in the weight room and getting conditioned for the spring.
Academically, what are you interested in at the University of San Diego?
I plan to major in business administration, and I'd like to take that. I'd like to get involved in marketing and like advertising.
Maybe you can be your own agent when the major leagues come calling.
Yeah, exactly. Make my own contracts and everything.
Yeah. You know, now you can have name, image, and likeness as well. You could charge for this interview.
Exactly. We'll be sending a bill over real soon.
That's a sort of a. It's going to, I think it's yet to be determined how that is going to affect things. You know, it's just a, it's the wild, wild west, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a very tricky game out there, and you know, it gets the best of everyone. It's a very tricky game.
Yeah. I think it's, yeah, it's so contrary to what I've always thought of as college athletics, over the years, you know, and now all of a sudden it's just wide open. Which any other student can do that. You know, I don't have a problem with it.
It's crazy that a college athlete can now be sponsored by a big time brand name.
Yeah.
And profit.
You know, I mean, if you were, you know, somebody said, "Hey, I think you'd be a great model for Levi's jeans," you know, and yeah, you're just a history major, but you're not an athlete. Oh, you could sign any kind of contract you wanted to. But, oh, you're a baseball player? Oh, no, you can't do that. You know.
Well, now it's crazy that the NCAA is allowing you to do that, and you are allowed to profit.
Absolutely.
Which is good. I mean, it's hard for college athletes to find a job. A lot of them get out of college and weren't drafted, and now they have no resume. They have no job.
In fact, if you had a full ride, you weren't allowed to have a job.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Because you know, it would be real easy for a super booster to say, "Well, why don't you come water my lawn and I'll give you $1,000 a week?" You know.
Exactly. Yeah.
But now it's like, now it's wide open. But it's wide open for every other student who's not an athlete. So it's only fair that you guys can do name, image, and likeness.
Exactly.
So just throw three or four no-hitters in a row and call me and I will represent you.
Sounds good. I'll wear a Bishop's Hour patch on my uniform.
Very good. That'll be wonderful. So how soon do you go down there?
I head down next Thursday.
Oh, wow. Wow. And how? When does class start?
We start September 1st.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Very good. I'll be down there the next weekend to cover a football game.
Very cool. Is it a USD football game?
Yes, USD against UC Davis.
Awesome.
USD against UCD.
So, oh, yeah, that'll be a good one.
Yeah, I got to be careful.
They will run into each other, huh?
Yeah, the last time the Aggies were down there, they came down to the last play of the game.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, USD football is very fun to watch. They're very competitive. Very good.
They like to throw the ball. They've always had good quarterbacks there. They dominate the league that they're in. It's a different league than you're in baseball, but they dominate that league. And we've got a great coach who's been at it for a long time. And nice stadium right there on campus. And it's a great experience. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe I'll see you at the game, and our prayers and best wishes go with you, and certainly give your best to my best to your family, and we will be checking the box scores religiously.
Thank you for having me out here, Bob. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure, Gabe. God bless. Take care.
God bless. Take care.
Yeah, that's Gabe Maya, and Gabe. This is the second or third time we've had him on. Product of Christian Brothers High School right here in Sacramento. A great kid, a humble kid. He's very, very talented. He's going to go places anyway. And it's just so refreshing to see a teenager, a high school senior, already just graduated, so now a college freshman, pick a place where religion is important, where God is important, where the Catholic faith is important. And put it all in perspective. Yeah, he's excited about his baseball career, but he's much more excited about his faith life. And credit to him, a credit to his parents. And it'll be fun to watch his career. But he's playing, for those that don't know college baseball, University of San Diego plays at the highest level. They're Division I, Division II, Division III. There are a lot of different levels of college baseball. All of them great and all of them competitive. But Division I is the highest level and produces a lot of people that move on to professional baseball. So we wish him well. Our prayers and best wishes go to him and his family. So, Gabe Maya, you're a winner already in my book. That's going to do it for us today. God bless. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is Yasmin Castellanos from the Catholic School Department, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.